various topics. He's an executive in residence at the Sawyer Business School, Suffolk University, where he teaches organization behavior and produces an iTunes program called Inside Leadership. He has a doctorate in organization behavior from Harvard and is a licensed psychologist in the Commonwealth of Massachusetts. Thank goodness he's out of his jurisdiction because he'd have a lot of clients. He gives keynote addresses to professional associations around the world. His most recent address was to the Global Conference of Chief Information Officers for the Society for Information Management. It's really a privilege to have him speak to our group tonight. And without further ado, I give you Larry Steibel.
Thank you very much, David. Can you all hear me? And can you all see me? I'm making a digital recording of this program. You'll be able to hear me, but you won't be able to hear you, so you can say anything you want. And then I will give David a copy of the MP3 that he can distribute to anybody who wishes it. I'd like to sort of recognize a couple of my colleagues. Mary Ann Peabody here is my partner at Steibel Peabody Associates. Marilyn Durant is my friend and my colleague for more years than Marilyn and I will ever admit, and she is my eyes and ears in Southern Florida. This is a topic called From Ideas to Action. What that means is I'm not here to give you a good speech. Maybe it'll be good, maybe it won't, but I'm here to help change your lives. So if all you get out of here is a good speech, then you didn't get the purpose of what you're here for. So I'm going to suggest some ideas, and I'm going to make a deal with you. I'm available for you for free for up to an hour of individual consultation by the phone. If you want to follow up on any of the issues that we discuss. So again, the idea is not a good speech, but how do you change your life? If I can help you, I want to help you. This is not about a speech. This is a talk that will be of value to people who are in the following situations. How many of you are in situations where, as you're thinking about your career, you're saying, you know, it might be good if I had multiple source streams of income, not just one stream of income or two streams of income. I know. How about being on a board? How many of you have thought about that? Okay, so hopefully this will be a value to you. Here's another talk. How many of you have ever in your career, or maybe right now in your career, have a subordinate where you're saying, this person is really fabulous. The problem is she thinks like an auditor. She doesn't think like a CFO. She thinks only on the liability side reduction of the basic accounting way. She doesn't think strategic. The buzzword to use is, you'd be so much more valuable if you thought more strategic. Has anybody ever gotten feedback like that from a boss? Whether you thought it was deserved or not, anybody ever got feedback like that? Well, if you have, being on a board of directors is a great way to show someone that you can think strategic and you can think enterprise-wide. Another reason why you might want to consider what we're going to be talking about today is that many CEOs, they have to have CFOs. They don't necessarily like to have CFOs. They wish they didn't have to, but they have to. And when you approach a CEO and talk about a problem from a CFO point of view, particularly if they come from sales and marketing, they're just bored shitless. They don't really care. On the other hand, if you could phrase the same issue from the point of view, I want to help you in case a board member asks you a question about X, Y, and Z. They may pay more attention to you because boards hire CFOs and they fire CEOs. So it's about also positioning your career. So that's what we're going to be talking about today. In my experience, in Mary Ann's experience, we've been doing this since 1979, right after Sarbanes-Oxley, a number of board people were very excited about that because they thought there's going to be lots of opportunities for CFOs on the boards of public companies. After all, Sarbanes-Oxley does require financially competent, financially literate. It even requires that the chairman of the audit committee be a financial expert. And so we got lots of calls from CFOs. They wanted to be on boards, and the reason they wanted to be on boards is that they could be on the audit committee, and they could be the chairman of the audit committee. How many of you would be qualified to be chairman of the audit committee under Sarbanes-Oxley? Okay, a number of you. The problem is, it never came to pass. You know, Sarbanes-Oxley was all about enforcement, and first the George W. Bush administration, and now the administration of Barack Obama, really isn't enforcing this issue about making sure you have financially literate, financially competent people on boards of public companies. Indeed, if you're a CEO, it'll pass. It's good enough. So the great opportunities of Sarbanes-Oxley never really materialized. Where are the opportunities for you? I'm going to refer to a 2010 PricewaterhouseCoopers survey. I will. David has a copy of the slides that I'm showing. If any of you would like a copy of the slides, just ask David or ask send me an email.
Consistent with his presentation about multiple revenue sources, there will be a small chart.
Right.
Larry, do you need me to check that battery?
It's not working. According to the PwC survey, 45% of public company boards really are looking for gender and racial diversity. And I do see that in our own search board search practice. There's always the caveat, if you can find a competent minority, if you can find a competent woman, absolutely, we were very interested. But we're not going to sacrifice our standards just to have diversity of race and have more women on the board. But if you are a woman, if you are a minority, and if you meet the competency requirements, boards are indeed looking for you. What's the best route to find a board? Well, you know, obviously nothing has changed. 86% of board members get hired because of networks. They know someone on a board or they know a valued advisor to the CEO. The retained search firms are really account for a very small sliver of the board of directors searches. So your best opportunity is, guess what, networking. One of the issues that I'm finding in my practice is, yes, there is the verbal commitment, we want more women, we want more minorities. They have to be qualified, and we can't find the qualified people, so we'll hire people from our golf club. And because we're looking at our networks as our primary source, what happens is the new board members become very similar to the old board members. And I can tell a board when they're going to be in a problem. And it's an industry that's going through a lot of volatility. And then somewhere along the line, they tell me everybody gets along just fine. Whenever you hear those two things in tandem, that's a problem. If industry was steady state and stable, it's fine to get along fine. But if it's not, you really want diversity of perspectives. There's a lot of research that shows that if you're a team organized with achieving a certain specific task, like let's kill Osama bin Laden, it's very good if everybody's thinking alike. Everybody has the same values. You know, a Navy SEAL team should be consistent. But if your task force is primarily a problem-solving one, if everybody's thinking the same, that's a problem, not an opportunity. So again, for those of you who are job candidates looking at companies, ask about the board. If it's a great board, everybody gets along fine. And if the industry is going through upheaval, that is not a good sign. Anybody ever been through one of those? Everybody gets along fine and it turned out that was a problem? What skills do board wants? You can't see this, but the greatest number is up here. 50% of the boards really want active CEOs. That still is the number one request that I get. Give me a practicing CEO, not a retired CEO, but a practicing CEO. I have never gotten a request for a CFO. I have gotten requests, make sure you don't get me a CFO. and the reason why they specifically say that is that there is a perception that CFOs do not have a balanced perspective about business. That if you looked at the basic accounting equation, they position themselves on the asset, on the liabilities protection. They're the people about how to reduce your costs. They're the people to talk with about minimization of liabilities. But they sort of have a blind spot about taking risk. They have a blind spot about asset enhancement. That's the problem with CFOs. And the point that I want to make is, do not position yourself as I'm an average CFO. Nobody in this room thinks of themselves as average. But understand that if you're looking to market yourself as on a board, you want to demonstrate, and we'll talk about how you can demonstrate, you're not the typical CFO. And you do look at both sides of the basic accounting equation. Over here, retired CEOs, 30%. They want financial expertise, but if they can get a CEO, from a board perspective, the financial expertise is covered. Risk, only 20% of boards are interested in adding people who are with risk backgrounds to their board. If we have a problem with risk, we'll hire a consultant. We don't need a board member. That's overkill. Plus, from a basic accounting equation point of view, assets equals liabilities plus owner's equity skews the board towards the liability side. We want balance. Any lawyers in the room? Don't be ashamed. Don't be ashamed. Any lawyers in the room? None? Okay. One hand? Okay. Sorry. 1% are looking for legal expertise. My advice, if you're interested in being on a board, you will be hired despite being a lawyer, not because being a lawyer. I've never met a general counsel who says, oh good, another lawyer on the board. That's just what I want.
Well, I am on a board, and I've been on the board for a publicly held company, not a public company, for many years. But I'm also a CPA, so I think it might be the fact that I view myself as a business person, and that's the key difference. But I get involved in a lot of things in that relationship, and I will tell you, it's made me a better professional.
Yes, I mean. I think the key value for you to be on boards is it makes you a better business professional. It gives you a different perspective about how business is done. It forces you to look at both sides of the basic accounting equation. So I do recommend it as an experience. I think whether or not you become a professional board member or not, I think the experience about being on a board is positive. The other reason I would recommend you all think about developing board options for your career is the networking. This is a wonderful group. I'm very supportive of FEI, but here's the weakness: you're all finance people. And when there are more good jobs than there are good people, this is a great room to be in. When there are more good people than there are good jobs, you want to be networking with people who are not like you. So having a board network is good for you. Developing board options is good for you. Here's titles of recently elected independent directors in 2010. Again, I'm going to read this to you, and if you want an actual copy, just ask David. In 2000, 53% of the new board members of public companies were CEOs, current active CEOs. In 2010, only 26% were CEOs. The other slide said this is what they want. This slide shows this is what they got. And the difference is, because of the pressures of running a business, more and more CEOs are reluctant to get on too many boards. And so the population of CEOs to draw on is shrinking. Retired CEOs, In 2007, it was 7%. In 2010, it was 17%. CFOs, 21%. No change in. So CFOs are getting on boards. I just think, though, that the CFOs that are getting on boards that I know of position themselves as untraditional CFOs. Like you're positioning yourself as the untraditional lawyer. There's one, we have one professor in the room. Only 8% of the board members of public companies came from higher education. Lawyers, consultants, 10%. So that's the distribution. Food chain. How many of you have ever been to a bar mitzvah? Okay. Isn't it kind of ridiculous that a 13-year-old boy gets in front of a group of adults and squeaks, "Today I'm a man!" Today that ceremony is just so charmingly outdated. It's a ritual. But once upon a time, when you were 13, you took on the responsibilities of a manhood. And how many of you maybe have pictures in your family or have seen pictures, 19th century pictures, of little girls maybe 1, 2, 3 years old and they're dressed in the lady's dress, or a 3 or 4 year old boy dressed in a man's costume that's been sized? Any of you seen a picture like that? Well, in the 19th century and earlier, the prevailing thought was a child is but an adult, small size. And indeed, the whole bar mitzvah ritual is sort of a thought that's the case, that a child is but an adult, small. Today we realize that's just not true. Today we would say, okay, you take a 65-year-old white guy and you take a 6-year-old white girl, are they alike? And the answer is they are alike and they are different. They are alike in the following senses. They are both human beings. They are alike in that if you did a DNA analysis, probably the DNA analysis would be very similar to the two. From a sociological and from a life issue point of view, and in terms of the struggles that each is dealing with, these are not the same creatures. It's the same with boards. How many of you are members of National Association of Corporate Directors? Any of you here go to NACD meetings? Well, when you look at the governance literature, a lot of the governance literature these days just talks about boards as though there's this one entity called a board of directors. But that's like calling a child an adult, a small adult. Not every board is different. And there are differences in boards, and there's a food chain on boards. So I want to discuss the food chain of boards. And I want you to think about where are you on the food chain, and what's the next logical step up for you? See, I think I'm pretty good, but I don't think I'm going to get a call from Apple to be the next board member for Apple. That's not the next logical step up for me. I know where I am now. I know what the next logical step up is. Also, as you're positioning yourself as being on a board, don't come to me or any recruiter or any contact and say, "I want to be on a board." That's like saying, "I want to be a human being." Or, "I'm a businessman." See, I got a businessman. There's a businessman ring and a businessman watch. It means nothing. Be specific about what kind of board you're talking about. The first kind of board is the trade association board, or a religious organization board, or a community board, or an arts board. How many of you have been on one of those kinds of boards? Am I right? It's easy to get on these boards. It's so hard to get off.
It's like a road trip.
Right. It reminds me. There was a song about the "Welcome to the Hotel California." You, You can check out, but you can never leave. So that's the first board. These are usually underfunded, mission-driven organizations. It's very easy to get in, very hard to get out. In terms of committee structure, forget about it. It's very loosey-goosey. And in terms of the sort of the distance, the people in corporate governance call nose in, fingers out. You know, keep asking questions, but get your hands out of the detail. Forget about it. You have to get involved in it because it's so understaffed. Am I right? Key thing when you get into a board like that is structure your exit at the time that you get in. You know, if you get admitted to the board, or starting on Monday when you talk to the chairman of the board, say, look, I'm going to be here for another X years, and set the clock. Because if you don't set the clock, structure ahead of time, what's going to happen is as you want to leave, it's going to be perceived as it's a slap in the face of the CEO. Or the real reason you're leaving is that Steve and I are having a problem on the board, and Steve is winning and I'm losing. And I couldn't handle Steve's pressure. Forget it. Just set up a time and leave. Because there's just so much to learn on a board like that. And after a while, you become the smartest person in the room. When you become the smartest person in the room, you shouldn't be in the board. There's nothing to learn anymore. You're not going to grow. So that's the first level of the board. By the way, those are great boards to be on, particularly if you believe in the mission. Those are great boards to be on, particularly if you look around the room and you realize you're not the smartest person in the room. There's somebody you can learn things from. That's a great experience for you. The next is the board of a family-dominated private company. How many of you have ever been on a board of a family-dominated private company? It's like a three-ring circus, right? You have business and emotional issues running at the same time. And your role as an outside board member really is to focus the family's attention on succession planning. That's your most important task, because that is such a difficult thing for family businesses, and such a common reason why families don't get to the next generation, because they screw that up. So that's your job. And everything else is a minor commentary. If you get off that track, you're going off on a tangent. You've got one key job. It's the job that the family members can't deal with, and that's why you're there. One of the recommendations I make, if you're going to be joining a family business, write your resignation letter in advance and give it to the CEO and say to the CEO, the minute that I feel that I am part of the problem or no longer being listened to, I'm going to date this resignation letter and I'm going to hand it to you. And you have a copy of the resignation letter. The minute that you feel I'm part of the problem, or the minute that I'm wasting your time, you date my resignation letter and you hand it to me. I am not here just to be collecting money. I'm here to be part of a solution. If I don't feel I'm part of the solution, I'm out of here. The reason why that's important in a family-dominated business is you can easily get co-opted by the family. You can get sucked into the family dramas. You can easily, after 3 or 4 years, become part of the problem in a family-dominated business. You have to show that you're willing to leave. Anybody have any comment about this or reaction? Anything you want to?
100% accurate.
It's been consistent with them?
Yeah. And you've almost got to get the family business CEO, whether it be the father, the grandfather, the son, to focus on that issue and give it his undivided attention. Because otherwise, too much of the emotion and the other stuff
right.
will be totally distraction.
Right. Anybody else have any comments about that?
Well, that was when I got involved in this board, I knew part of the family members. This was a family that was like third generation in this business. National business, significant locations in the center of the country and on both coasts. And, I was involved in one set of sides trying to split the thing up. And then, I brought some things, maybe that you could do this or that. And then a couple of years later, they contacted me and they said, would you ever be interested in mm-hmm. sitting on our board as an outside advisor? And they had done this many years ago where they had outside people, but they got a couple of outside people. And, you know, it's been at least 10 years, maybe 11 years that I've been doing it. Mm-hmm. But that was my biggest concern at first is, you know, am I going to get sucked in? And I was also concerned that they may view me as being on one side of the family because years ago, I represented one side of the family. Mm-hmm. And I will tell you today, we're the third generation's moving. We're looking. The fourth generation is coming in, working part-time. And I will tell you, they bend over backwards to be fair to each other and to pump up each other and provide opportunities for each other. And
so you're
like a very bright people.
It's a third generation family business moving into the fourth generation.
Right.
Looking at the statistics, anybody want to take a guess? How many family businesses ever make it to the second generation?
Very few.
10% only make it to the second generation. Want to take a guess? How many businesses make it to the third generation? 1%. So you're dealing with a very unique situation. And if you're brought onto the board of a family business, your goal is to help that business be part of that very unique goal. Keep your eye on the ball. The ball is the succession. Everything else, secondary. The other thing you might want to consider if you're looking at a family business, the whole issue about equity, who cares? It's designed to be a family business. So there's no liquidity event in a traditional way. So you may want to suggest instead of a board of directors, have a board of advisors. That way the founder doesn't have to be worried about dilution of income and dilution of power. And then to be compensated either in the form of phantom shares or compensated in the form of annual fees. But that's another way to deal with family businesses. Next kind of board is the private equity board. How many of you have ever worked for a private equity dominated company? Okay, that's a totally different thing. There it's the drumbeat is on the exit strategy. You are dealing with very financially sophisticated, highly opinionated private equity person. And whereas the governance ideal for board members is nose in, fingers out, in the private equity is, if you're doing a good job, Jenny, our fingers will still be involved. And Jenny, if you're not doing a good job, both my hands will be on the tiller. So it's hands in, nose in. And a lot of times these boards and the private equity eventually gravitate towards CEOs who have been down this route before and who understand the game. But the real tension, you know, in a private equity board is with what I call the virgin CEO. And the virgin CEO is someone like this. Somebody started a business. Why do people start their own businesses? Two things. They want money and they want independence. And they think starting their own businesses will get them those two things. Then their business gets to a point where in order to take to the next level, we need more money. But in order to get more money, I got to bring in this bastard from the private equity. And that's going to rob my independence. Oh, that's okay. I'll make the trade-off. That's okay. It's not okay. Their passion is money and independence. They thought they'd be willing to give up their independence. They're not. But they bring in the private equity person anyway. Usually the private equity people are, because they live in the world of private equity, they are relatively insensitive to the emotional stress for the virgin CEO in suddenly being in a situation where they're no longer in control. They're relatively insensitive to the fact that the CEO is stressed out and traumatized by the decision that was made. And then what happens is there's a dysfunction where the CEO tries to control things by hiding information from the private equity board, which any of you understand private equity people, that is the worst thing that you can do. Because once you start hiding information, it's over. They don't trust you anymore. If they don't trust you anymore, so that's a totally different issue. And the issue is, how do you act as a bridge between the CEO, particularly the Virgin CEO, who may need some help, and the private equity person who's got his or her own agenda? If you're the external person on the board, you can have an extremely valuable role. I was listening to a book the other day about Queen Elizabeth II, and the dysfunctional things that happened when Diana joined as Diana, what was it, Duchess of York?
Princess of Wales.
The Queen said to the Princess of Wales, "Look, I know this is going to be an adjustment for you. You know, I'm available to you if you want to talk." And then walked away. Well, mistake number one, your mother-in-law is the queen. You can't go to the queen to ask about advice for dealing with the dysfunctional family and her screwy son. Queen can't do that. Second is the queen is busy. The queen is the queen. She has her own schedule. So she never positively reached out to Diana. And Diana, being young and relatively innocent about royal matters, would never reach out to the queen. And so things began to spiral downwards. It would have been a lot better had there been a external board member trusted by the private equity person, trusted by the CEO to act as that mediator. So that's the private equity kind of company. Again, the dynamics of that company is driven by the exit strategy. Everything is drumbeat to that. The next is the pre-IPO company, and that's now you're starting to get into Sarbanes-Oxley compliance. Now you're starting to get into the kinds of things that you're comfortable and familiar with, and then you get into the small cap public company. Let me mention about small cap public company. The difference between a Fortune 100 company and a small cap public company is that on a large cap public company, Disney does not need its board members to open doors for them. Apple is doing quite well. It doesn't need its board members to open doors. But in a small cap public company, one of the reasons you're hired is because of your network. Who do you know? Who can you call? What doors can you open? Oh, you should be on a board because you have a lot of expertise in risk management. No, I don't need to bring you on the board for that. I can hire somebody for that. I can bring in a consultant for that. What is your network? So some of you don't fully appreciate the power of your network when you're dealing with pre-IPO companies or small cap public companies. They're very important. I call them short sleeve board members as opposed to long sleeve members. Long sleeve members are the typical CFOs that come to me and they say, I can be a member on the audit and oversight. I can be a member of the audit committee. It doesn't really go so far. My response is, well, what can you do at a full board meeting? How can you make a contribution? What doors can you open for the company? Those are the issues. Any questions about this? Okay. I don't know about you, but I always have a difficulty sitting in one spot for a long time. Why don't you stand up and stretch? Come on, stand up and stretch. All right, that's enough fun. Sit down. That's enough. Now we've talked conceptually, now let's get very practically. The first step in getting on boards is to have a board resume. You have seen this for years and years. You know, this is called a resume. You're probably sick of seeing this. And typically, the typical resume will have something at the top. It may call, this says operations management, but yours might say chief financial officer. It might say financial executive. And then down here, some nice things about here. Then here's professional experiences. How many of you are familiar with this? Okay. Now, we're going to be talking about putting together a board resume for you. A board resume is not this. Because your professional resume doesn't deal with the issues that are important for board members. So a board resume is exactly what your regular resume looks like from professional experience down. But this part here, the sort of the executive summary, would change. How would it change? This is an example of someone we have on our board of directors, Talent Bank. He's a VP of finance, he's CFO. Now, here's the key sentence. Industry experience includes low and high-tech manufacturing. So he has a sentence to say, these are the industries that I know best. So in your paragraph, what are the industries that you know something about? What are the industries where you have some contacts where you can open doors? Notice over here, he says he's qualified to work with family-dominated companies and companies owned by European firms. So he's not saying, I'm interested in being on a board. He's saying, I can really help a family-dominated company or a company that's owned by European firms. He's being very, very specific. And I want you to be very specific. Think about what are the companies and the boards and the food chain where you can add the most value. Notice he has a sentence here. He can contribute to full board discussions involving the following areas. Crisis management, evaluating strategic alliances, blah, 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 blah. But the sentence is, can contribute to full board discussions involving blank. Where CFOs sort of let themselves down is they focus on the audit committee. They focus on risk. That's only one part of what a board member is responsible for. What about the full board discussions? How do you make a contribution at the full board? So there's a specific sentence about the things this individual can do. Over here is another sentence. Qualified to be the chairman of the audit committee, can serve on the nominating governance and the compensation committees. Once you're dealing with public companies, typically the committee structure of the boards will be important, and those are the key committees. Compensation committee, audit committee, nominating and governance committee. What committees can you serve on? What committees would you want to serve on? So have a sentence that looks like that. Here's something about his education. He says he's got an office in Portsmouth, New Hampshire, but he can travel to board meetings. So you live in southeast Florida, but are you available to travel to go to meetings? Or do you want to go to meetings on the east coast of the United States? Or are you open to going to meetings in Europe or China? Can you be specific in your board in your board summary? I have on the table three board summaries. This gives you further ideas about the key concepts. So one is, what kind of board can you make a contribution to? What kind of discussions at a full board level can you make a discussion with? What kind of committees could you best serve on? And finally, since people are going to hire you not only for what you know, but for who you know, what doors can you open for us? Who do you know? So you've got this on the PowerPoint. You've got three examples. And notice over here, there's space, there's empty space. I'd like you to take some time. How would you begin to draft yours? And if you want to have, I'd like you to start drafting yours, do it now. And just talk about it with each other. And I'll go around to the tables. I want you out of here with something that you can use. A first draft of a board summary.
Public company experience.
It might be useful, you know, start with just putting down the industries where you know something well, and where you have contacts. So you start with the industries. The second is, what are the substantive issues at full board discussions where you feel that you could make a contribution? Mergers and acquisitions, finding sources of capital, crisis management, CEO succession. What are the issues? Again, if you're not sure of the issues, read through the examples, because the examples you'll see replicate themselves. How you doing? Again, my suggestion is start with your industries. What industries do you know really well? And by really well, you have you not only know the industries and what the issues are, but you also have networks there. Second question is, what full board substantive discussions could you really have value in? And the three examples I give, you know, talk about some full board topics, M&As, finding sources of capital, CEO succession, CEO performance evaluation. Every board has to review and approve the strategy, M&A, exit strategies. What contributions can you make to those discussions? And finally, think about where in the food chain, where on the board food chain are you? If you've spent most of your time with nonprofits and professional associations, then maybe the next logical step would be to be on the board of a private company or a private family-dominated company. If you've been on the board of a family company or a private company, maybe the next logical step would be a private equity company. How you guys doing?
Thinking a lot.
Okay. Again, the suggestion is you start with what industries do you know really well? By really well is you understand these industries and you have networks in these industries. Second is full board discussions. The three examples give examples of what are full board discussions. Review and approve the strategy is a full board issue. Exit planning, including mergers and acquisitions, is a full board issue. Finding sources of capital is a full board issue. Succession planning for CEOs is a full board issue. So what full board issues can you discuss?
Business board
kind of topic in terms when the company, you see the direction the company is not what it's supposed to, and then sometimes they involve in so many things at the same time when they forget about the main purpose.
Well, when I'm talking about strategy at a board level, is typically the CEO will present the strategy as a final document for your review and approval. So you're not responsible for making the strategy, you're responsible for reviewing it and approving it.
That's a board member.
Okay. Another issue to think about. There are two issues in boards. The yin and yang of corporate governance. Advice and counsel on one hand, audit and oversight, on the other hand. When you're looking at a trade association board, when you're looking at a family business board, when you're looking at a private company board, the balance is really on advice and counsel. As you move up the food hierarchy, it shifts more to audit and oversight. The ideal would be 50-50, but it never happens. So where are you? What kind of board member are you? Again, one of the reasons why board members seldom want CFOs is because the perception is these people are really good for audit and oversight, but not advice and counsel. How are you guys doing? Come up with anything?
Sorry, write down the industries and functional areas to start.
I'm going to give you 5 more minutes. The purpose is not to come up with the final draft, but to have the first draft. And I'll be glad to work with you individually if you want to work on it some more. But I wanted to get you going so that you leave this room with a product in your hand that you can either throw away or decide I'm going to work on it some more. How are you doing, Steve?
Scratch something out here. I don't know how good it is, but can you read it? I may be the only one who can read it.
Senior Vice President at a
Money Center Bank. With experience in raising capital in the form of senior bank debt, sub debt, private equity, and excess in public markets.
Okay. You're talking about you.
Right.
This is not about you. It's what's your value on a board.
Okay.
I'm looking at one person who started talking about himself, his title, what he's done with it in his job. This is not about you. It's about what's your value for a board. I can be of great value to a private equity dominated board in low-tech manufacturing that is looking to expand in China. I'm qualified to provide advice and counsel at full board meetings when it comes time to talk about corporate strategy, mergers and acquisitions, crisis management, and exit. I'm qualified to be on the audit committee, compensation committee, and nominating governance committee. In other words, I'm not talking about myself. I'm talking, this is how I can be of value to a board. Notice I'm not talking about my past either. I'm talking about my future. These are the boards I could be of value to you, not on what I did in the past.
Someone probably asked this question already, but although I have played board roles in the past as a board member, but the company was family.
Family business, yeah.
But it was a board meeting, but nobody knew it was a board meeting.
Mm-hmm. Right.
If I want to be part of a more formal board meeting, what are the ways that I can promote myself to become?
I'll be talking about it. Great. Don't worry about it. Okay, begin to wrap it up. Obviously, now you've got your great board summary. And if you want to use me as a sounding board to help craft it, be glad to do that. We do have a board of directors talent bank at our website, which is called boardoptions.com. I would encourage you to look at boardoptions.com, go into the board of directors talent bank, and look at some of the other bios that are on there. The 3 bios that I've sent out are from our board of directors talent bank. Again, the questions that you should be asking yourself What's the next level up for you in the food chain? Second is, how can you contribute to full board discussions? And the next, what committees could you serve on? For inspiration, go to boardoptions.com, go to the Board of Directors Talent Bank, look through some of the other things that we have. Also, we have something called Submit Your Candidacy for the Board of Directors Talent Bank. You can click on there, and there's a whole series of questions that we ask that you might find of value that are along the lines of tonight's discussion. It's all free, and then just download it and send it to me, and I'll be glad to work with you. Now, any questions on anything we've done so far? You all cool? Okay. Let's go to the next step. Now that you've got this beautiful board resume, how's anybody going to get to see it? And who's going to see it? So now we're going to look at distribution routes for your board of directors resume. We've already said who's likely that you shouldn't waste much of your time with. And the people that you shouldn't waste that much time are people like me, recruiters. Recruiters might help you 15% of the time, more likely than not, no. The way in which board members are recruited, according to the PricewaterhouseCoopers survey, is through people who are already on boards. They turn around to themselves, who's good, who's available. So talk to recruiters, but don't spend a lot of time with the recruiters. So who should you be spending time with? Corporate attorneys. Are you a corporate attorney?
I'm working at
an accounting firm. Okay. This is not a typo. The sentence says the following. The less attorneys know you, the more comfortable they will be about referring you. Here's the logic behind this. Let's say I know Adam, and Adam is a corporate attorney. I say to Adam that I'm interested in being on a board, and I give him my board resume. Because Adam and I know each other, Adam's going to be very reluctant to refer my resume to Natalie, because Adam, being a lawyer, spends a lot of his time parsing words. And it's very confusing, the difference between a referral and a reference. They sound the same, don't they? But a reference is, I'm vouching for this person. A referral is, you know, I found this on the street, Natalie, I thought it might. But in common parlance, it gets very confusing, particularly when somebody, a high-class attorney like Adam, is the one making the introduction, right? So I'm putting Adam in a win-lose situation. If it turns out I'm a great board member and Natalie is so thrilled to have me as a board member, then Adam wins with me and Adam wins with Natalie. That's a win-win situation. On the other hand, suppose I'm a jerk. Suppose I'm not adding much value to Natalie's board. Natalie will go to Adam and say, where did you find this guy, Stiebel? So he could lose with Natalie, he could lose with me. He's in a win-lose situation. Lawyers don't like to be in win-lose situations. I'm better off if I know Adam, to say to Adam, Adam, here's my board resume. Would you refer this to some of the other partners that you have at the firm that I may not know? Now then Adam refers it to Rick. I don't know you, Rick. You don't know me. But this resume comes. Now Rick can take this resume, say to Natalie, Natalie, I know that you're looking for a board member. I don't know this guy, Larry Stiebel. He was referred by my partner. I don't know if he's any good, but on paper he looks interesting. Now Rick is in a win-win situation. If I work out well with Natalie, he gets full credit for that. If on the other hand, I'm a jerk, Rick is not going to be blamed. Do you see the difference? So the paradox is you will get more value by talking to attorneys you do not know than attorneys you do know. And why do you want attorneys to be at the top of your networking list? Because how many of you work at companies where an outside counsel serves as secretary to the board of directors? Nobody? One? Two? In many companies that I work with, some outside attorney serves as the secretary to the board. So they're at all the board meetings. They are taking notes. Often they're the ones who know where the openings are going to be. And a good corporate partner always thinks of himself the same way you think of yourself, and that is, I'm more than an attorney, I'm a good business partner. And I'm always looking for ways to justify my fees and my value in ways that are beyond the law. So this is a way for me to do that. So it's good, does Rick very good to be able to say to Natalie, before you spend the money for a recruiter, why don't you take a look at Larry Stiebel's background? I don't know him, but on paper he looks interesting. Just another one of the many things that I do to justify my existence to you. Easy for a lawyer to say. So that's why lawyers are the number one on your list. Anybody think of any reactions to that? Okay. Other valued advisors to CEOs, again, the focus is CEOs, not CFOs. Valued advisors to CEOs. Consultants are often in this category, if they're working with CEOs. So people particularly who are in the strategy area. Obviously, other board members will be important. I have, Marianne and I have written an article in Psychology Today this month. If you just Google Stiebel Psychology Today, you'll get it. And it's about how to use LinkedIn.com and also how to use InvestorSpaceBusinessWeek.com as tools to find out who is on. You may know someone who's on the board of a public company. But investingbusinessweek.com will allow you to get a visual representation of that person's entire business board network. And that could be very interesting for you. That's investingbusinessweek.com. You just Google that. Or just Google Psychology Today Stiebel and look for the first article in our series. And it's on using technology to make networking less nonlinear. And this is one of the technology tools that we recommend. It takes about 2.5 years on average to get on a board. That comes from something that I read, but it seems to make sense for me. I find people who are CFOs, even CEOs, they think in terms of weeks and months before they're going to get onto a board. It seldom happens that short. It's usually a process of months. It could even be years. You're just having to be doing the networking, planting the seeds. Because again, the way most board members are going to be chosen in the Southern Florida area is through networking. Other board members will talk to other board members and say, who do you know? It just takes time. And again, part of the issue is you're trying to develop another avenue of visibility for yourself. Each of you has a brand as a CFO. Now you're trying to develop another brand as a board member. You can do it. Any questions? Okay, again, I'm available to talk with you individually about how to, once you get the board resume, how do you actually send it out. Additional resources that you might want to consider. Obviously, there's Board Options is a website. Another really good resource is NACD Online. That stands for the National Association of Corporate Directors. It's based in Washington, D.C., and I don't know if they have a Southeast Florida chapter. Okay.
Well, Linda, by the way, Linda, our chapter admin also doubles as the administrator for the NACD South Florida chapter.
Okay. A lot of very good articles on NACD. They also have these things called Blue Ribbon Commissions, and the Blue Ribbon Commissions are usually quite good. In addition to local chapter events, there are Washington, D.C. events, which tend to be quite good. And that's another way to get visibility with other board members. Here are some other things that you might want to consider. And again, all of this is on the PowerPoint that you can get. This is a KPMG 2011 Audit Committee survey. There's a Oliver Wyman and NACD survey about the boards, and then one from Deloitte. And that's the end. Any questions? Thank you very much.
Thank you for coming tonight and putting on a great presentation. We do have a little gift for you. We hope you will find useful and attractive.
Thank you very much, David.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. For those of you in the C chair, now we know what it takes to get on the board, and because I'm sure we have to deal with board members at least every quarter, if not more frequently than that. Thank you again, Larry, for coming and sharing with us this knowledge. I saw a lot of people take notes about some of the tips you passed on. Hopefully you'll get some responses. And I think you've given us